Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake, the show where we go deep, we get weird, and we search for the meaning of life along the way. Presented by Cass Media and Soul Pancake.
Welcome to Metaphysical Milkshake. I'm your host, Jessica Jackley.
And I'm your other host, Holiday Reinhorn, and today we're talking about motherhood.
Obviously a topic that we know a thing or two about.
Yes, that's correct. I almost have an 18-year-old. Like, I'm about 30 days away from that.
That's unbelievable. I'm only 10 years in, but I have four little ones, so the math works out. We both have a lot to say on this topic as women and as mothers.
What's going on?
Obviously.
What do you mean, what's going on? It's a podcast about motherhood.
Excuse me.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Are these guys serious?
We got this. We have a few things to say about motherhood. Excuse me. Just as
please let the men handle this. No, okay.
Oh my God. And,
I'm being kicked out of the motherhood podcast.
Maybe listen and learn. Yeah. Okay. Maybe listen
think,
when we're
I
done.
I think there's some things that you could learn from us.
Okay.
We'll be done in about an hour. Maybe a sandwich. Would that be
out?
Ow! Ow! Hey!
Don't let the door hit you on the way out of the podcast room.
Hey,
unbelievable!
Hey,
can you believe this?
Who do these ladies think they are?
Who do they think they are? Jeez,
we're talking about motherhood, unreal. And Rain and I, as fathers, have a lot to say on this topic.
A lot to say. Oh, men can't talk about it. Let me tell you, ladies, a little bit about motherhood.
I find it very sexist to think that a man cannot explain to a woman what motherhood means. I find that to be incredibly offensive.
It's so limiting. It's a gender crime, really.
By the way, in my household, I mean, not for nothing, but, you know, I do all the cooking and the cleaning and the laundry and the shopping and all that stuff. And Jessica just sits on the couch and scratches her crotchal area. Is crotchal a word?
Yes.
Ow! Stop throwing things at me! People can see this.
In my household, we hire people to do all of that work. So neither of us do any of the traditional mother work. But in all seriousness, certainly we are not qualified to talk about motherhood. So we thought we would bring on someone who is qualified to speak about motherhood. The author, comedian, stand-up comic, host, TV writer, award-winning
Jessie Klein is going to be coming.
She has regularly appeared on the Showbiz Show with David Spade, VH1's Best Week Ever. I mean, the bio here is incredible. CNN commentary on the debates. She was a writer on Saturday Night Live. She was a consulting producer on Transparent and showrunner and executive producer of the new Showtime comedy series, I Love That For You, about a group of people working at a home shopping network. I love that. This is her second book. Her first book was a bestseller called You'll Grow Out of It. And she's been a consulting producer on the animated sitcom Big Mouth since 2017. And she voices the main character of Jessie. Let's bring this mother expert, Jessie Klein, to the show. Jesse.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
No, we're excited
we're
to have
thrilled
you.
To have you. We have greatly been enjoying savoring.
So good. So funny.
Your delicious collection of essays.
Oh my God.
On midlife and motherhood.
Thank you so much.
And who better to be talking to you about motherhood?
This
is
two middle-aged men.
That's, you know what? Let me get rid of any sheepishness you may be feeling and say, it makes me so happy to talk to men about the book, and assuming you're not lying about enjoying it or having read it.
Listen, here's how we think about it. If we can pass laws to control your body, then certainly we can have a conversation about it.
Yeah, I mean, let's just cover all our bases.
You know, here on Metaphysical Milkshake, we try and dig deep. We try and get a little bit weird. We want to explore the topic of motherhood in perhaps a different way, maybe a profound way. And we would love to, Reza and I were talking before the interview, like we would actually like to learn a little bit about motherhood. What we want to drink in. What haven't we thought about? I have one child. Reza has four young children right now, but we really want to put ourselves in the shoes, in the stomach of motherhood.
And listen, we're totally willing to admit that there might be some things about motherhood that we don't know about. I mean, I'm open to that idea.
Reza, I mean, if you have four kids, I feel like suddenly the tables have really turned. Because you could probably be schooling me. I mean, I've just got the one, and it's definitely going to be staying that way.
So listen, there's a lot of questions going on right now all over the YouTubes and media about, like, what is a woman? Who can be a mother? This is a big, you know, cultural and political debate, and we're not going to go there.
No.
Thank
you.
This is not that conversation.
Okay.
We're stepping out of that. I mean, if you have things to say, we'd love to hear, but
we're going to be in a lane. We're staying in a lane.
We're staying in a lane. Yeah. But and we were talking about this first question earlier on. Like, forgive us if this is a sexist question. Maybe this is a sexist question.
Ooh.
Maybe it's sexist to think that this is a sexist question.
I'll be the judge of this.
Okay.
Okay. Becoming a mother, how do you understand and view motherhood as a fundamental part of a woman's identity?
Ooh.
Or is it?
You were like, let's go deep, deep, deep. We're not even going to ramp in. We're going to go 60 billion.
Yep. You thought we were going to be like, what made you want to write a book?
Where'd you go to college?
Yeah, where'd you go to college?
We're going right straight to the center of the vagina on this question.
I feel like there's a lot of overlap in my observations around sort of how certain kind of femininity and womanhood that our society and culture prizes and praises and demands really overlaps with kind of the view of motherhood in our culture, which is like you're supposed to kind of just shut up and do it and be as kind of quiet as possible about it and make it as pretty as possible so that no one else is uncomfortable. And I think for mothers and women who aren't mothers, I think like trying to operate within those prescribed little boxes is emotionally untenable. That's a lot of where the book came from. And just, I think a lot of my experience, especially in the really early years, my son is 7 now. But it just felt like, oh my God, I'm having such an unruly emotional response to all of this. It feels so hard and so messy. And I'm not seeing sort of the room for that reflected back in like any popular culture around motherhood. In the same way that when I was like a teenage girl, I didn't feel like I really was seeing reflections of like what I was actually going through in anything. You know, I feel like I grew up in a visual culture that's, you know, it's like just be very thin and be very pretty and ideally white and just, and that really gets into your head. And I think like, I just always go back to an image. I realize I'm really rambling, but this feels like a safe space.
Totally. Plus we have an edit button, so it's fine.
It's like,
not.
We're going to cut out all. I think of always like diaper ads, like bait those little diaper, mm-hmm. like diaper ads where you see a mother just like holding her infant and it's like the most Vaseline lens and everyone's smiling and she looks great and the baby looks great. And it's like, everyone's just in some kind of little gauzy heaven.
No one's covered in shit.
No one's covered in shit. But I mean, the covered in shit thing, I kind of talk about in the book too, a little bit, I think, if I remember. I guess I'm talking about it now if I didn't. But like the covered in shit thing, I will say, is the one like trope that you sometimes see in like comedies that are quote unquote made for moms. Or like,
yeah.
It's like, she's covered in poop. And like, that's the punchline of the thing. But it's like, that's, I mean, you're both parents, so I'm assuming you know, like, that's kind of, that's not pleasant, but it also doesn't really matter. No. Like, the real mess is so much darker than that.
Yeah.
You know, the mess of like what's going on inside of you, what's happening to your identity, the anger and frustration and rage you might be feeling. Like, I don't really care about the poop on the clothes. I mean, you know, you do. But anyways, that's a very long answer, but you sure set yourself up for it with a deep, deep, deep question.
You literally said like being a woman is difficult, dark, and messy, and growing up one. And being a mother is even more difficult, dark, and messy. And culturally, you're not really supported for that part of the story. But I'm interested in that. That I think the kind of the dark side of womanhood and motherhood, which has been for decades so, you know, so suppressed, you know, we don't want to hear about that, you know. Mm-hmm. They would literally, hysterectomies was like, you're hysterical and we're going to cut the uterus out of you, you know, and pull a Frances Farmer on you.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine how challenging that must be.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the feedback that I've gotten from the book, which has been very, very satisfying to have heard from so many women who've written to me. And I don't mean to be tooting my own horn about this. I'm really saying this in a way because it's been quite touching. Is a lot of women have reached out to say, thank you for writing this. Like, I finally feel seen. Like, especially mothers who have very young children. Just to hear that, like, that what you're going through counts as a story and that there's gravitas to it and that it is a hero's journey for people to go through this. And it matters as much as any sort of more cliche, quote unquote, bigger story in the world of tales that we're used to seeing. You know, I think like hero's journey, like we think about Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and things like that, where like a man goes to a faraway place and conquers something or fights somebody. But I think like these stories of women and the journey they're on as they protect and raise their children is of equal heft and import.
Were you one of these people, and I say people, not women, because I was definitely one of these people who always thought about having kids, like wanted to have kids? Like, was it like a drive of yours? Or, you know, I'm just curious, kind of the way that you thought about motherhood in theory, as opposed to, you know, the reality of it.
No, totally. So you always wanted kids.
Oh, always.
You knew you wanted to be a dad.
Always. In fact, Rain knows this about me. I've been engaged 4 times because I would like meet a girl and be like, "You look like you have childbearing hips. Let's get married." Fortunately, it never worked out until it finally did with like
until the one that stuck.
Yeah, the one that stuck, exactly.
That's so interesting. I never think about. I feel like I wait. And Rain, did you feel that way or no? Did you always know you wanted to be a dad? I never hear men talk about this.
Oh yeah, I always wanted to be a dad. Yeah, that was definitely one of the roles I wanted to play, and it was tricky for me and my wife because all of a sudden we found ourselves in our mid late 30s and we're like, uh-oh, biological clock. And then we had trouble conceiving and it took us like a year and a half, 2 years, something like that. And my wife, I think similar to you, my wife was 40 when she had our son.
Yeah.
And it was a very difficult and traumatic birth. So we snuck one in under the wire.
A buzzer beater.
Right.
Yeah, I had a buzzer beater. Well, that's so interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I never felt compelled towards motherhood. I had a couple of friends who like always, I'm very lucky to have some friends from when I was pretty young like elementary school, junior high school friends. And a couple of them I know really always knew they wanted to be mothers. And I definitely did not. I felt like I was, I don't know why I didn't. I didn't have strong feelings kind of against it. I was just driven by other things. I didn't really get there until kind of the moment was really like after I got married, and I was also quite, you know, geriatric in these terms. They do use that term, like geriatric pregnancy. I'm sure you're familiar with it. I think as if you're like 36 or above.
That's right.
You're like a geriatric pregnancy, high risk or something. I was kind of trying to find out how late I could push the buzzer beater because my spouse was interested in having a child. And then in the process of like doing a routine fertility check where I was like, well, let's just find out. I can wait till forever. It was revealed I had like less than zero eggs left or whatever. And then it became like this huge panic. And
I negative number of eggs.
The negative eggs. That's my first album. nobody buys it. When I found out I had negative eggs, I flipped out and I was like, for whatever reason, I guess it maybe sounds kind of small and a little like Tracy Flickish or something, like, oh, I'm going to do the thing I've just been told I can't do. But I really, when faced at that age, I guess, with never having a kid, I suddenly wanted to have a kid very badly.
Rain, you seem like a brunch kind of guy, right? You're a brunch, love the brunch person.
I love it. I love it. Most important meal of the day.
Most important meal of the day is brunch. And my assumption is that, you know, before you go out to any brunch place, you pour over lists and lists of reviews, right? You want to make sure you're going to a quality place.
Yeah, you got it.
Well, then why don't you do the same when you're booking a doctor's appointment?
Hey,
for God's sake.
He's off.
Sorry, I was a little too impassioned. But that's how I feel about ZocDoc, my friend. See, with ZocDoc, you can see real verified patient reviews to help find the right doctor in your network and in your neighborhood. After all, finding the right doctor is just as, if not more important than finding the right plate of eggs Benedict, maybe.
On ZocDoc, you can find every specialist under the sun, whether you're trying to straighten those teeth or fix an achy back, get the mole checked out, anything else, ZocDoc has got you covered. Its mobile app is as easy as ordering a ride to a restaurant or getting delivery to your house. Search, find, book doctors with just a few taps.
You can find and review local doctors, read verified patient reviews from real people who made real appointments. And now, when you walk into that doctor's office, you're all set to see someone in your network who gets you. So, all you got to do is go to ZocDoc.com, find the doctor that is right for you, and book an appointment in person or remotely that works for your schedule. Every month, millions of people use ZocDoc, and I am truly and honestly one of them. That's where I found my doctor. It's my go-to whenever I need to find and book a quality doctor.
So go to ZocDoc.com/milkshake and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then start your search for a top-rated doctor today. Many of them are available within 24 hours. That's ZocDoc.com/milkshake. ZocDoc.com/milkshake. Thank you so much. And now, folks, a little word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. You know, wellness, mental wellness, self-care is so important for all of us. It's especially important for me. I wake up every morning. I have my kind of devotional period, which is meditation and some prayer. I do a little journaling sometimes. Of course, I have my weekly therapy. These are the things that keep me grounded, that keep me kind of aligned with my life's mission and purpose, with a little bit of serenity thrown in. So think about it like a car, okay? Now, if you had the same car for your entire life, how would you take care of it? Well, that's how our brains work. That's how our psyches and our souls work. Why don't we treat them the same way? Because how we care for our minds affects how we experience life. So it's important to invest time and care into keeping them healthy.
You know, it's funny, like even to this day, there's still a weird stigma about getting therapy, which just doesn't make any sense at all. Like you rightly said, you know, We are all dealing with a world on fire. And listen, it helps to have someone to talk to about all that stuff. And what's great is that BetterHelp is an online therapy service. It offers video, phone, and even live chat only therapy sessions. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. You don't need to go sit in a dusty office, you know, in a waiting room with a bunch of other patients. This is very private. It's all about you and the things that you need to get off your chest. And by the way, it's also much more affordable than in-person therapy. You can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours.
So our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/milkshake. That's betterhelp.com/milkshake. Give it a try.
See, I wonder if it's because of like the way that I was raised. I mean, I love my parents. My father has passed. My mother is still around and will never, ever, ever die.
No, she will not.
You know, I think like when I grew up, like I didn't come from like the most, you know, functional family. And so like I always as a kid.
Oh, can't relate. Not
exactly.
No threads
so
here.
I think there's like two avenues and Rain definitely also came from a completely dysfunctional family. I feel like when you come from that, there are these two paths that go before you. One is like, I'm never going to have kids. And the other is, I'm going to have a million kids and I'm going to prove that I can do this better. And I definitely was in that latter category. And like before, when we were kind of doing research for this pod, I was reading perhaps the preeminent expert on all things women and motherhood, Nietzsche.
Of course.
Yeah, it's my go-to for any information on women, motherhood. He has this whole thing where he talks about how one's view of women is determined by one's relationship to one's mother. So he says, quote, everyone carries within himself an image of womanliness derived from his mother. It is this that determines whether, on the whole, he will revere women or despise them or remain generally indifferent to them. And this guy is
cool.
Thanks. Thank you, Nietzsche. Thank you. Thanks for that.
He's always so chill. Nietzsche's writings are so
really
chill.
Is so chill. By the way, Nietzsche also said, quote, usually a mother loves herself in her son more than she loves the son himself. All right. Thank you, I guess.
He's projecting.
Exactly. He is projecting.
Wow, wow, wee, wow.
But, you know, it got us, Ray and I were talking about this earlier. We got us to thinking about, like, how our mothers, especially, have either inadvertently or not shaped us as people. Not just the way that we look at other women or whatever, but just, like, the way that we exist as human beings. And I mean, I certainly have a lot of stories. I know Rain's got some stories. His are more depressing, I think, than mine are. Is that something that rings true to you? Like when you think about your mother, do you see the relationship that you guys had as fundamentally defining kind of how you see yourself as a mother? Is there a story or something that kind of is indicative of that?
As a mother or as a full human?
I guess like both.
I mean, does Nietzsche have a similar theory about people's relationship to their dads?
No.
To their fathers?
No. Just women.
Just men. Well, that's a whole ton of pressure. And I'm wondering if that is because the assumption is like dads just like peace out normally and like maybe like out of 100 dads, like 20 are even in the pictures.
I think definitely in Nietzsche's time, that dad meant something quite different. That's for sure.
Yeah, because I think of myself as being very, I don't know, I'm curious to hear for you guys, but very much formed by my mother and my father and my relationship to them both, kind of in equal parts, you know? Like I don't think I agree with our old friend Friedrich, if that is his real name.
Are you saying Nietzsche may have been wrong about something? By the way, our producer Safa just told us that Nietzsche's dad died when he was 5, which makes so much sense.
I mean, I guess if that's the parent you're left with, that makes tons of sense.
I just think about like, I mean, my dad has had a lot of influence in my life, but my mother, you know, it's hard to shake, I think, your mom's influence. Like, I think the things that I probably dislike most about myself, I can trace to my mother. I can represent my mother and her relationship to me with a single story. When I bought my very, very first house, I was 30 years old. I bought a house.
Oh, good on you.
I was so proud. I was maybe more like 35 now that I think about it. But I was so proud of myself. I bought a house in Los Angeles, which is no small thing.
No.
And, you know, it was this, you know, it was not a giant house, but it was my house. And it was like, I was so proud of myself. And when my mom first came to see the house after I had moved in, she kind of, you know, walked through every room and walked through the first floor and went down to the second floor. And then she had to use the bathroom. So she went to the bathroom and she came out of the bathroom. And I said, "Mom, like, what do you think about my house?" And she said, "You bought a house with a broken toilet paper dispenser?" The toilet paper dispenser was broken. That's literally all she said about, "You bought a house with a broken toilet paper dispenser?
How could you be so stupid?"
And I was like, okay.
Wow. What were you thinking?
This is me. Yeah. Like, I am always like, I always see the worst in everything. I am always like, I can guilt trip anyone into just an early grave. That's my spiritual gift that I inherited from my mother.
The thread. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's so funny because I feel like I kind of have a little bit of, and I love, you know, love my parents so much, but there's definitely, I think they both have a lot of that vibe of like I was a very, God, sorry about so many brags, but I was a very good student growing up because I was a classic middle child. I was, you know, middle of three, wanted to please, wanted everyone to get along, didn't want to make waves. So I just was like, I'm going to just get good grades and do what I'm supposed to do. Like when I would get like a 95 on a test, like my dad was the person who would be like, "Who got the other 5 points?" So yeah, I mean, I guess that vibe can come from either side, but I've lost the plot. Now we're just kind of lightly complaining about her.
Well, what we're talking about, Jesse, is how have our mothers shaped us? And this reminds me of a joke. It's one of my favorite Jewish jokes. My grandmother was Jewish. It also applies to Persians, by the way, Reza. Always. So you might get something out of this too, which is Jewish or Persian mother. Her son is elected president of the United States. This is the very short version, okay? The son is like, "You've got to come out for the inauguration." She's like, "Oh, no, I couldn't possibly." And he's like, "No, we're going to fly you on Air Force One. You know, it'll be either a kosher buffet or a kebab buffet, however you want to do it." And it's like, okay. So she shows up at inauguration. The son is being sworn in. She's seated on the dais in the front of the TV cameras next to the Secretary of State. And he's swearing in on the Bible or Quran or the Torah or whatever it is. And substitute the whatever book you'd like. And then she turns to the Secretary of State and she says, "My other son, he's a doctor."
A classic.
Very true.
But that relates to the toilet paper dispenser. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's interesting because for me, my mother left when I was about a year and a half. And I saw her, she subsequently got married 3 or 4 more times. I saw her maybe 3 or 4 times before I was like 16 years old. So I was not traditionally mothered, so to speak. I was with an emotionally absent father and I had a stepmother and we had some issues, long story. Anyway, I got to know my mother as a teenager. And although, you know, her taking off definitely left some emotional scars, I think for me, she was able to step into my life really right when I needed her most. It was kind of like, I was really lost. I was in a tremendous amount of pain, a lot of mental health issues. I was very in a very dark place, really low self-esteem. And she came in and made a concerted effort to kind of to mother me, to parent me. And I remember the first time I was able to really weep was in front of her. I was able to kind of express emotion, like all of this kind of like mothering that I was not able to get as a child all of a sudden came into focus and really enriched my life. And I, you know, I have issues with my birth mother. I have some very serious issues, but I have a tremendous amount of gratitude as well because she came into my life right at that time. And so I guess my question is, you know, motherhood is often seen as something that you are, like you just are a mother. You have unconditional love for your child. Fatherhood is seen as something that you do. You do fatherhood. You provide, you care, you teach someone how to build a birdhouse out of popsicle sticks or whatever. That a mother's life is defined by a profound sacrifice that fathers are not expected to face. But, you know, this, I was profoundly mothered, but not in any kind of traditional way. But I'm just wondering if you had thoughts on, again, the effect that mothers have on us, the effect your mother had on you, the difference that kind of, there is a profound difference, it seems, between motherhood and fatherhood. And yet, is it really such a difference?
Yeah, that's such a good question.
Not the way I do it. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's a it's a really interesting question. I think like a lot of couples are, you know, talking about some version of this question all the time if they have kids, in terms of what the expectations are. Gosh, I definitely think there is a difference in the nature of the bond. I mean, I'm like always very scared to talk about anything just outside of my own experience. So I can really kind of only speak to that. I do feel like there is a quality of kind of like the maternal connection I have with my son. I don't know. I'm really pausing on these words because I'm like, I don't want to, it's really tough. It's a really tough question. It's really hard for me to say that I think that like mothers have like an inherently different connection to their children than fathers do, because I think like that's obviously sort of person to person. I think like in some ways I would say that I do, and in other ways I would say that I don't. I think I have like a sort of gentleness with him, and a kind of, I think I have like a very deep sense of empathy in terms of like seeing need in him, like when I'm needed. And I think some of that might also be like my own personal experience. And I like with my parents, who definitely did their best and are very loving, but I think like in some ways, like they could be a little bit withholding. But so I'm like very attuned to kind of trying to meet this just sense of nurturing. Again, part of like what led me to want to like write the book is that there are times where I just feel very unconnected to like the kind of 24/7 drudgery that is mothering. And like, I don't like to sit on the floor and play for hours on end. I do get bored. I do fantasize about like leaving. And sometimes I also am very lucky to have the privilege of having like a nanny. And so I kind of like tap out a ton. Mm-hmm. But again, I think like the expectations are a little bit out of whack in terms of like, I get, especially at the beginning when my son was born, I think I had a lot of guilt that I had to move through and understand, and got a lot out of talking to other moms that I could be very open with. And realize like a lot of people feel that way. And I think we're just not really allowed to feel that way. And I think feel very unsafe expressing those feelings. So I think I felt both. Like I feel this sort of closeness, the desire to nurture, and at the same time can really feel like, get me the fuck out of here, you know?
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
We've had these conversations in the past about nature versus nurture. It's like, it's such a fun theoretical question to have until you have kids. But you do have this one line in the book where you talk about how you write, quote, "I suspect this can probably be traced directly to my pessimistic little genes, although it's impossible to say how much of this, of your son's inborn skepticism," that's what you're talking about, "exists due to cosmic chance and how much is inherited Jewish trauma." And so I'm sure you've been thinking about this a little bit, because, I mean, this nature versus nurture question is one that, like, all parents start to grapple with, whether they are even aware of it or not. I know where I fall on that question, because I have identical twins.
Okay. This is a very good
control sample. These two are genetically identical, but it's like the same exact input and two totally opposite outputs. But I'm curious, where do you fall on that whole debate? The nature versus nurture debate.
I definitely, as someone who grew up very aware of feeling kind of like, I don't really feel like the way girls are supposed to feel, I guess, or like I'm outside of the sort of norm of what like girls are supposed to look like or do, and really was into quote unquote boy stuff and didn't want to wear a dress, blah, blah. I was very aware of this going into having a boy. Very aware of like, how can I not put these kinds of expectations on him? How can I really just let him grow into who he is? It's so fascinating too. I'm sure you're both. It's so, you know, I think also as the girl for me, I was very aware of like all of the bullshit around girls' clothes. Like I never wanted to wear pink. I didn't want to do rainbows and so I wasn't really thinking about boys' clothes. And then buying clothes, even for my, you know, from the minute they're born, like buying clothes for a newborn, a one-year-old, a toddler, the boys' clothes are truly just such hot trash. Everything is like a robot killing a dinosaur.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, it's so aggro and the colors are so ugly and you're just like, can we just get like a plain yellow t-shirt, please? And it's really hard. But
can I just jump in the middle? I want you to finish. And I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I do have to point out for those of you watching that I am wearing my pink Golden Girls t-shirt.
Yes, you are.
I'm so glad you're pointing this out because I didn't see the Golden Girls, but I clocked the pink tank top and I was very appreciative of it.
So I'm pushing against gender norms a little bit. No robots blowing up dinosaurs. But please continue, Jesse.
My son has turned out to be such a boy in ways where I don't understand, even from a very young age, it has a little bit changed my sense of nature and nurture. I'm really into cars, really into trucks. His dad is not super into cars and trucks. I don't think we brought one into the home. He's like a little jockey jock. This is stuff from when he was like two, you know? And it's just so not the boy I thought that I would have. But I'm doing my best. I feel like everybody who has a boy has a real opportunity to like make a better boy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How are you making a better boy?
I'm just trying at this age to really do my best to like, I mean, you know, as the kids say, normalize talking about feelings, feeling feelings, like saying we're allowed to paint our fingernails if we feel like painting our nails, like just even in casual conversation, just being very aware all the time of like when Wimbledon is on, like we're watching women's tennis. We are reading books about like Simone Biles, like trying to really expose him to as, I guess, fully human a spectrum of like what women are as what men are traditionally been presented as
doing. Maybe you need to watch Golden Girls with him.
Oh my God. I actually truly just watched Golden Girls the other day. I was on a little girls trip with like my best friend and we were staying in our hotel room and had a day. And then we came back and I was flipping around and Golden Girls was on. And I was like, well, we found it the rest of the night.
I just shot a show on happiness and we were in Bulgaria and number one most popular sitcom in Bulgaria.
Golden Girls. Way.
Yep.
It is undeniable. It's undeniable.
Well, those nice old ladies just,
those nice ladies who are 2 years older than us.
You mentioned this earlier, but something I was intrigued about, your very first essay in the book is about motherhood being kind of the ultimate epitome of Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey. Can you tell us about that? Can you, you mentioned it briefly, but I'd love as much as juicy specifics as you can get into. Why is motherhood like the hero's journey?
I had started thinking about the hero's journey as I write in the chapter. I heard Elizabeth Gilbert talking about it on a podcast at a moment where I was in the middle of some very banal, or so I thought, momming stuff, but having very big, big, big feelings about it and feeling every day like I was in, I don't think I'm overstating, like a real life or death struggle with myself. And also having a young, an infant where it's both the most boring and the highest stakes sort of thing because kids just can die so easily. It's like if you're not watching them constantly, like in goes the penny or the marble or whatever, and everything's tits up. But so I heard her talking about like a hero's journey doesn't always traditionally look like what we think it should. And I started thinking about motherhood and basically like the sentence, I guess, that sums it up best for me is like after reading a lot of Joseph Campbell and reading a lot about the hero's journey, a hero's journey is basically a journey in which someone, in order to protect someone else, has to go through a series of obstacles that are incredibly challenging at great personal sacrifice to themselves. And at the end of the journey, the hero is different than when they began. And to me, that is exactly what motherhood is. Every day, you are kind of by default saving someone's life just by kind of existing near them. I mean, especially at that age, again, like just the act of sitting and watching your kids sort of doing nothing is keeping them alive. At the same time, it can be so soul crushing and so hard. And I think I said in the book somewhere that you do, my experience at least, and I've talked to people who I think feel this way as well, is that you do, as a mother, have to kind of annihilate yourself in order to take on this role. And I certainly feel like I don't know anyone who has a child who doesn't feel changed by it in some profound way, although those changes are, different person to person. So at least in terms of like this Joseph Campbell kind of, what is it, the hero with 1,000 mm-hmm. faces, like the way we've understood this tale, to me, we've just always understood it in this very specific way. And I think like it's very meaningful to women and all parents to just think about what you are doing as having the gravitas and importance of a story that could be shared with people and would mean something to other people. And that has meaning, is worth repeating, is worth telling.
I had never thought of it before, and I think it's a truly profound sentiment. And I think because at the heart of the hero's journey of every one of those stories is sacrifice. And I think about my wife, Holiday, raising our son, Walter, and the amount of sacrifice that she has put in. I remember when he was an infant and we were at our old house, our first house, and it had a little pool in the back, and she was holding him, and like the phone rang or something, and she started to move and she started to trip and fall, and she's next to this pool.
Ugh.
And she had to hold on to him desperately like a football and just fell right on her knees and then right on her elbow and just like blood coming out. But, and he didn't even like cry. He didn't even make a peep, but that was just like when that vision is etched into my head as the kind of sacrifice that she's making. She almost lost her life in giving birth to him, but then there's the little sacrifices too. It's kind of going and, you know, the preschool graduation that takes 3 hours of your day, you know, all of that stuff, the driving to school and all of that, you know, it also has to do with facing your demons. You think about the Star Wars saga, The Empire Strikes Back, when Luke has that dream and goes into the cave on Yoda's planet and sees Darth Vader, his biggest, you know, demon that he has to face. And so there are. And you mentioned it briefly earlier about how women came up to you and said, hey, I really appreciate you. I relate to this book. There's a dark side to motherhood. You said on Fresh Air once, it feels like one of the biggest cultural taboos is to say that you've had a second thought about being a mother, or honestly, even just to talk about the hard stuff. But yeah, of course, there are those moments when you're like, I can't believe I've gotten myself into this. And you mentioned you're not so into sitting on the floor and playing with blocks for hours at a time. You know, other mothers can pretend to be that way on Instagram, but that's not you. So what were your demons in terms of being a mother? What was in your hero's journey? What were the demons you've had to face that you wrote about that other women recognize and respond to?
I think it was just really going through the litany of specifics that feel like that. There was that thing that I wrote about, like you're shielding your child from a sword that you yourself are holding. You know, like we have this whole Abraham Isaac story in the Bible that's like foundational to Western culture, and obviously it's a lot to unpack. But it's interesting to me that, you know, it's not a mother's story. I think there's just, for me, it was like the moments where I just wanted to leap. I just wanted to like literally walk out the door and leave. And I, or even worse, you know, like I had a moment when I was working on this book where I was at dinner with an actress who I will not name, but she is a well-known actress.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
It's not Gwyneth Paltrow. But just to say, I was intimidated by this person. I didn't know this person that well. And I was talking about the book, and I was talking about how, you know, I wanted to be talking about like moments where like when they're like around 1.5 or something. And it's, I think a lot about those nights where you're just in this fifth hour of trying to put them to bed, and you're hungry and you're tired and it's late and you keep putting them down and they will not go down and they keep crying. And it is crazy making. And I would reach a point where, and I would never do this. I would never do this. I would think about like throwing my kid against a wall. You just fantasize about it. You're just like, get it away from me. I would never, but I had the thought in my head. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to kind of share this with this actress. But I was like, I don't know her that well. I can't say that I fantasize about throwing my kid against a wall. That is so inappropriate to this moment, and I want her to like me. So I was like, oh, you know, when you just think about putting them down on the floor and never coming back. And she just didn't miss a beat. She goes, or throwing them against a wall. And it was so relieving and funny and dark and horrible, but also telling that just we all have these thoughts. And I think there's something that almost makes the thoughts worse for a lot of people, where you're just like, oh, I'm the only one having this thought. I'm such a bad person. But in fact, if we were allowed to just sort of talk about it, you'd be like, oh no, it's really normal to have these thoughts because what you're being asked to do is insane.
Yeah.
This is so, so hard. It's so hard.
And again, it's sacrificed time, sleep, energy, career.
Time, sleep, energy, career, and just truly like, it's like pushing a boulder up a mountain or something. It's so difficult. So I think in terms of my demons, it was, for me, those demons are just those moments of true kind of rage-filled impatience of like, I can't get this to be the way I want it to be. And I'm reaching my edges. Like I have a limit. Yeah. I'm reaching my full limit. And to understand like that's the heroic part is I think every mother and I think a lot of fathers go past, you have a limit and you just somehow go past it. It's like a marathoner or something.
Yeah. Now that I have an older teenager, a lot of the conversations with our, you know, parent friend group is kind of like, is the equivalent, which is, I just can't wait for this kid to fucking leave the house and go off to college. I can't wait to be an empty nester. I love our kid. Oh my God, please leave. And you're not allowed to say that, really. You know,
you're not allowed to say it.
And it's a terrible thing to even think, but it's a little bit true. It's not as bad as throwing a kid against the wall.
One of my dad's greatest gifts to me, I will say, was I remember when I was very young, he did say to me, my dad's a very deep and profound guy. And I don't remember the context of this anymore, but I just remember him saying to me, don't worry, everyone thinks everything. it was like don't worry about the thoughts, like everyone thinks everything. It stuck with me all these years. Everyone thinks everything. I mean, don't do it, but we all think it, and it was truly, it's carried me through a lot.
Well, honestly, I think that's why we gravitated towards the book so much, because it is very honest. it does kind of lay, you know, all of motherhood, the parenthood in general, out there in all of its glory and its gory, and it's a great collection and really, really funny and heartwarming and beautiful. Jesse Klein, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a great conversation to be in, and I loved hearing from the dads.
The book again is called I'll Show Myself Out, Essays on Midlife and Motherhood, and I hope you learned something about motherhood from us in this conversation.
Yes.
I mean you, Jesse, not the audience.
Oh, me. Oh, I thought what if I just was that boss where I was like, I'm not gonna respond to
that. That's probably the best way to
I'm not even dignify that with a response. No, I did. Again, you've got four kids, you're doing the most.
Wow, great conversation. Incredible. I've learned so much. What about you, Reza?
I learned a lot. In fact I feel like as qualified as you and I were at the beginning of this podcast to wax eloquently about motherhood, I got to say, I feel even more qualified now.
Absolutely. I mean, we were speaking to one of the foremost comedic authorities on motherhood, Jesse Klein. Now we get to name drop Jesse Klein at dinner parties with other mothers.
Well,
we get to talk to them about, you know, how painful it is, the amount of sacrifice that they make, about motherhood as the hero's journey. Yeah,
Maybe bring up
the dark side. Nietzsche quotes about motherhood, the dark side of motherhood. I could go on and on and on and on and on.
Okay, all right, I get it. I think we get it. And folks, you know, we've enjoyed this book, and so we have five of them, for our five whole books. It's hilarious. And you don't have to be a mother to like it necessarily. You could be a mother blank. But all you have to do to get your copy of I'll Show Myself Out by Jesse Klein is to write a review of Metaphysical Milkshake on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Take a little screenshot of that and mail it over to us at
Metaphysical@castmedia.com. That's cast with a K. Metaphysical@castmedia.com. Send in those screen grabs.
And listen, tell us about your mom. You heard us talk about our moms. Tell us about your mom. You can find us on social media at Reza Aslan, at Rain Wilson, on Instagram at Metaphysical Milkshake. And remember to follow, rate, and review us again on Apple Podcasts, You can also subscribe to the Metaphysical Milkshake YouTube channel and watch our full episodes every week.
You know what, Reza? Before we completely end this thing, you know, we have been male chauvinist buttholes for the last hour. I think you and I right now, we need to log off. We need to go find these powerful, brilliant women mothers, and we need to really just, you know, sit them down and tell them what motherhood is all about.
I feel like that's all. I'm going to go do that right now.
All right. See you next Thanks, week. Everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Metaphysical Milkshake is executive produced by Rain Wilson, Reza Aslan, and Colin Thompson. It is produced by Safa Samazadeh Yazd, Harris Lane, Mick Demaria, Hashem Self, and DJ Lubel. Cast Media is the production and distribution partner. Original music by Jeff Tang.
Encapsulate.
I'm trying to. Was I just father-splaining your?
You just mailed. You just
your response.
Father-splained my thoughts right back
well
to
done.
Me, and
well
I
done,
and yeah. I thank you for it.
16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.